That's how David Amber picks which radio hits he's going to do each week. He just throws all of Canada into a basket, and then he picks out. And we got drawn this week. David, thank you very much for drawing us and doing our show this week.
Oh, my goodness. As if anyone else is wanting me. I don't know. You guys, I always like coming on your show in Vancouver, though.
I appreciate you taking the time. David Amber of Hockey Night in Canada, of course. We've been conditioned to think it's going to be Montreal-Toronto for a very long time, so long as Montreal held up its end of the bargain and actually got into the playoffs. And now we might not get that, and if we do, it might be in the second round. Will you have some level of disappointment as a hockey fan if that is not the first round matchup?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's been a long time, as it's been well documented, since 1979, and I think it'd be an incredible matchup. I mean, imagine if they meet in the second round, that would be even heightened the intensity. So that would be pretty cool too. You know, as Karen said, though, I think any of the matchups are going to be compelling. You know, there's storylines for each and every matchup. The last time Toronto and Winnipeg played, Joe Thornton was absolutely apoplectic, chasing Nick Ehlers around the ice. They were jawing at each other in the penalty box for the whole 2 minutes. I'm not saying, you know, there's going to be all this craziness, but there's certainly enough good storylines there between the Jets and the Leafs if that were to end up being the first-round matchup. You know, we're going to talk about this tonight. We're doing the Leafs-Habs game on Sportsnet Ontario, and Anthony and Ellie and I are going to talk about what would be the choice matchup in the first round for the Leafs. And I'm interested to hear what those guys have to say. In my head, I do think Montreal might be the matchup they would prefer. I mean, it's a pick-your-poison situation. But, you know, the idea of Connor Hellebuck getting hot and the fact that the Jets have such great, you know, depth up front and do have sort of a shutdown line. And when you look at when Larry's healthy, those things would be scary, I think, to the Leafs maybe a bit more than the Montreal Canadiens.
So by my estimation, David, five times in a 16-day span, Montreal had its back up against the wall. It looked like everything was crumbling around them, and they found a way to get a win. They haven't won a lot, but they seem to have won in high-pressure situations when it looked like a team might actually track them down in the standings. What does that count for heading into the postseason?
Well, I mean, it shows a certain resilience. I mean, the narrative a week ago was, oh, my God, here come the Flames, the Habs are imploding. And then what's happened since then? You know, Drouin has left the team, a leave of absence. Weber's been hurt. Price is hurt. Tatar and Byron are still hurt. Gallagher is still out. And you would think, wow, they really are in trouble. And then they rattle off two come-from-behind wins in, you know, 30 hours, which has given them now a lot of breathing space. You know, had they folded up last Friday against Winnipeg, had they not had that third period comeback against Ottawa on Saturday, this would be a very, very different conversation we're having. So I think it does mean something. It shows resilience. It just shows the ability to bear down and score some meaningful goals. And that's been the Habs' problem all year is, you know, when can they score those big goals? Do they have the firepower to do that? And, you know, they showed at least in the last two games that they do have the ability to come from behind and take over a game. So I think a lot could be read into it. We'll see what happens tonight. It's a different animal going up against the Leafs. So we'll see if they can carry that momentum to tonight's game. But right now, barring something cataclysmic, I mean, they're going to end up in that playoff situation, whether it's the fourth or third spot.
David, Tyler Toffoli, 2 goals, 2 assists in the last two games. In each of the last two games, he's got 27 goals on the season. He's 4 shy of his career high. Scott and I were bandying around the idea of can he hit 32 in the next, you know, 5 goals in the next 6 games. Is he the best off-season free agency signing?
Yeah, and I know, listen, I know Jim Benning's been absolutely, you know, vilified in your marketplace for not re-signing Toffoli and you know, allotting the money elsewhere. But let's take a step back, Karen. I mean, all 31 teams essentially didn't sign Tyler Toffoli in the first 72 hours of free agency. They all sat there and passed on him essentially and spent their money elsewhere. So Jim Benning wasn't alone. Tyler Toffoli is a legit goal scorer. We saw that in his short stint with Vancouver, and we're seeing it in spades right now with Montreal. And to answer your question, I mean, yeah, you have to go through the high-profile free agent signings and really to assess if he was the best signing. But he's one of them, for sure. If he's not one, then he might be number two. But he's been everything the Habs could have asked for. Key goals, power play goals, game-winning goals. He's that threat that you have to be marked on the ice. I mean, Jeff Petrie scored the goal, the first goal for the Habs on Saturday, simply because Tyler Toffoli was flanking his wing on a 3-on-2. The defender opted to peel off of Petrie to go towards Toffoli, who'd been calling for the puck. Petrie lifted his head and said, "Wow, I've got a direct line to the net," and he scored a goal. Tyler Toffoli didn't score that goal, but in essence, Toffoli's presence on the ice helped Montreal score that goal. So he has been everything as advertised, and even better. And, you know, he really is that game breaker that the Montreal Canadiens have been dying for many years.
Now, you talked about the fact that Toronto probably would want to play a Montreal team in the playoffs, but there is that Winnipeg Jets team that Montreal is looking to track down. We talked about, you know, their depth up front, but they've got some injury issues, but they have lost six in a row and they kind of can't score. How do they figure out a way to get out of this funk that they're in?
The Jets, you mean?
Yes, yeah, the Jets, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a few layers to it, I think. I don't think it's a simple snap your fingers. I definitely think teams over a 50-game schedule go into a lull every now and again, and they're certainly in that lull right now. I mean, the biggest thing I would say about the Jets is, you know, Nick Ehlers is out right now. Lowry, who provides such a special thing for them, is out right now. And Connor Hellebuck, for as good as he's been, you know, has been, you know, not his best in the last couple of weeks. You know, Ehlers will be back for the playoffs, by all accounts. Lowry will be back. And Connor Hellebuck, you can, you know, trust him. His track record shows that. So I'm not overly concerned about the Jets. I think they certainly want to kind of right the ship in the next few games leading into the postseason. But my level of concern for them isn't as great as maybe another team who's suffering through a six-game losing streak.
Are you okay? Are you being attacked by a dog? Does your dog need to attack somebody who is getting after you?
I'm going to attack my dog if she doesn't quiet. She almost like waits till I'm doing a Zoom hit or a radio call or whatever, and then she's like, "Okay, I'm going to start going crazy." Yeah, they deliver the mail, I guess, around the same time, basically, whenever I'm doing these live radio hits. But she's cool now, I think.
What's the dog's name, by the way?
It's Bella.
Bella?
Well, yeah, fierce attack dog. She's all of 25 pounds.
Beautiful. Beautiful. David Amber and Bella joining us here this morning talking hockey on Rintoul and Sermon. Just a little more on the Jets. I wouldn't suggest for a second Maurice wants to have his team go into the type of tailspin. No coach would want that. There is this thing about the Jets and their personality collectively. I almost feel, David, as though that team plays better when people dismiss it a little bit. And I know they want to get things settled here heading into the playoffs. Do you agree with me that there's something about the DNA in Winnipeg that when they get discounted a little bit, it's when they start to really rise?
Yeah, I think that's a really fair statement. I think they've got that, as you said, in their DNA. They got that blue-collar work approach. The city is like that. And a lot of their players kind of have that edge. I mean, Nick Ehlers has that kind of edge. Blake Wheeler has that kind of edge. We see it on their blue line. You know, if you were to go through all the blue lines in the North Division, I mean, they're the most unsung blue line. And, you know, are they scaring anyone? No, but they know how to play within that system, get the puck up to the forwards. You know, if you have to, bank it off the wall, get it out. It's not pretty, but it's effective. And they don't mind taking that sort of approach and then letting their skilled forwards do the rest. I think they definitely have a bit of a chip. I think that's sort of their identity, their you know, DNA, or the forgotten group to some degree, right? Everyone talks about Toronto. Everyone talks about Edmonton and their incredible players. You know, last year everyone was talking about Vancouver and the future there. Winnipeg's sort of that team that flies under the radar, and I think that's fine with them, and they're kind of one of those, we'll show you. And Connor Hellebuck certainly maybe epitomizes the identity of that team. He's got a lot of that brashness. And you know what, quite frankly, you know, they've been Canada's best team overall over the last 4 or 5 years, and they deserve to sort of be given a bit more credit for that.
There's a great article out this morning, knowing you, because you're so well-read, you've already seen it. It's by Aaron Portsline. It's in Columbus for The Athletic, and he interviewed three anonymous players who've been there before and talked about what does Columbus need to do to change the perception about Columbus. We're going to talk about that a lot later in the program today. But as far as Winnipeg is concerned and the compare and contrast with Columbus, is there something the Columbus Blue Jackets can learn from what the Winnipeg Jets have done over the last number of years about keeping their players, making it perhaps a more attractive destination than it was years ago?
That's a great question, Scott. You know what the thing is? I mean, how many big free agents have the Winnipeg Jets landed, though? I really think what Kevin Cheveldayoff has identified is they need to draft well, which they've done. They need to, you know, train the players, get the players promoted up through the system, and then do their best to retain the players. So I think really that's been their calling. And Columbus and Jarmo Kekäläinen, I think, are trying to take the same approach, drafting good young players, making astute trades when possible, and then retaining those players. And it's not easy. I mean, we saw what happened with Bobrovsky, with Panarin, et cetera. I mean, there's been a long litany of star players that have chosen to leave Columbus. And Winnipeg fights that same uphill battle. One thing I'll say is you've seen guys extend in Winnipeg, and I think they feel there's something about the culture there, the hockey culture, the stability, right? Like Kevin Cheveldayoff's been there a long time. Paul Maurice has been there a long time. You know what you're getting. One thing in Columbus that hadn't been the case is they went through a bit of a rotation of coaches for a while. And who knows if John Tortorella will be there after this year. And, you know, they went through some different GMs for a while. And now it seems like it's at this, you know, stability button with Kekäläinen. So I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, good franchises don't need to turn out coaches, turn out GMs, and turn out player after player after player. They try and build within a group, trust the process, and go from there. And I think that's worked for Winnipeg, and maybe that'll work moving forward for Columbus.
No question. And retention is the key in Winnipeg as opposed to big-name free agents. But at some point, they said, we're going to have to pay somebody. And they paid Blake Wheeler. And that contract in a couple of years might not look great, but it's also a signal to everybody else that we're willing to take care of the people who are taking care of us. Does Columbus need to do that at some point?
Yeah, and that, you know what? Honestly, they're going to be facing that very soon with Zach Werenski and Seth Jones. That's exactly what they're going to be facing. Like, they need to ante up. They might have to pay even more to keep a guy like Seth Jones there when he knows he could maybe go to greener pastures elsewhere. So I absolutely think that is probably the blueprint. You can't be thrifty because it's a very competitive league, and you will lose your star players. And then you're back to ground zero, and you just kind of can you know, churn out that same situation where you're chasing. I'm very interested to see, and maybe they'll even try effectively to get Werenski and Jones or one or the other signed long-term sooner than later, not waiting until it gets to the 24th hour and you're, you know, stuck at trade deadline having to make a decision the way they had to make a decision with Panarin and Bobrovsky, et cetera. So I'm very interested, Scott. I do think it is sort of a put up or shut up time because Columbus is one of those sort of mid markets that, you know, isn't clearly, you know, seemingly a number one destination for free agents. So they're going to have to be really aggressive with their current players to make sure they're satisfied and stay.
One thing that Aaron asked the players, David, in this article was about John Tortorella, obviously. And you hear this from a lot of players. You heard it from the Sedins after his one season here. Like, they love playing for him, and they loved him. And they loved his tactics when it comes to being honest. And if you play hard, then that should translate into W's on the ice. Didn't hear. It's not this season, obviously, in Columbus. But you've got the view of John Tortorella from the players, at least maybe more the veteran players. But then you've got this outside perception of him where it just seems that he tends to run his course after a little while, at least from that's what the outside looking in when it comes to the media. How do you perceive the kind of John Tortorella aura that he has?
I think it's player to player. I think, first of all, he's won. And I think when you can say I'm a Stanley Cup champion, people will sort of sit up and listen a little bit better than if you don't have that on your resume. But above and beyond that, I think some players, and I've talked to players about this, some players, it's like having kids. Some kids, you need to say, come on, you got to do better. Work harder in school. Get your homework done. Come on, you got to motivate them in a way where you press them with pressure. Some kids, you got to go, hey, it's okay. You're doing well. Keep working at it. Things will get better. And then that motivates them, right? Mm-hmm. You got to know. You got to be able to read the room. You have to have high EQ. And I think where John Tortorella's struggled with certain players is they maybe need to be coddled. They maybe need to be explained a little bit of, why are you benching me? What did I do wrong? Don't just tell me, you know, you're playing like crap, sit down, like walk me through it, right? And I'm not sure that's always been his strong suit. I think he's smart enough that he's adjusted his coaching style to some degree. Some players love that brash honesty coming from Tortorella. You know, talking to Kevin Bieksa, that's the sort of style of coach he likes. You know where you stand, you know what you have to do, and as long as you're mentally tough and you can handle it, you'll be fine. And you'll actually embrace it as opposed to a coach who doesn't have dialogue with you and you don't know where you stand. Some guys, though, they shrivel up and it's very difficult. They can't handle it and it's combustible. And we've seen that on numerous occasions. So I think it's really incumbent on Tortorella to know his audience, just like it's incumbent on a parent to know what motivates your kids, what will work, you know, what kind of discipline will get the best results and make them feel good about things that they want to achieve to the highest level. And I think that's where it can get a little tricky because every player is different. So you have to have incredible EQ to sort of know who you're dealing with and how to deal with them.
What kind of treats motivate Bella?
I'm about to find out. I went outside when she started going crazy. So when I go in, I'll find out what's happening in there. Oh, gosh, she's probably tearing up my shoes as we speak.
Hey, buddy, I'm just glad that you have the same status in your household that I have in mine. That, like, if something is going on, like, you're the one that has to go to the other room. You're the one that has to go outside. Like, you are lowest on the food chain, aren't you?
I'm not even on the food chain. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Wife, two kids, and a dog. I'm definitely at the fifth level. If we get a cat, then, you know, maybe I'll be right there with the cat. But I hope that's not happening anytime soon.
I'm glad to hear that in the Amber household, that when we're putting together the corporation, you aren't even like a part of it. You're just the skip the dishes guy that delivers.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Hey, man,
it's funny how that works.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we all know. We all know. Hey, David, have a great show tonight, man. Thank you very much for taking the time. We've got some compelling stories here down the stretch, just maybe not the ones we would have anticipated. We'll do this again soon. All the best to you and yours.
Yeah, thanks so much. Anthony Stewart and I will be in the intermissions as well in the Canucks game, so we'll see you tonight.